Hey, let's start the show.
It's August 30th, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today with the magic fingers, Norman Chan. How you doing?
Okay.
You're making waggly magic fingers there. Why was that?
Fake piano. The music.
Oh, you were piano playing?
Yeah.
Could you now? Are you? I know you played piano for a long time as a youth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the capability to listen to our theme music and play it on piano?
Over time, yes.
How much time?
Do you have a lot of pianos and a lot of monkeys?
I'm not talking about infinite monkeys and infinite pianos. I'm talking about one Chan.
One chance?
And Chan.
Oh, okay.
You.
And how
infinite
many chances?
Time. As long as you want.
Oh, yeah.
Take your time.
Absolutely.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Over time, yeah.
Joining us today, as it seems like always now.
Yeah.
Seems like you've never not been here, Joey.
Yeah.
Joey Fumelli, how you doing, sir?
Good.
Taking a break from the push-ups.
Yeah, the push-ups and the weights now.
Last week we were sitting there watching you do like curls with the big giant weights, and it made both of us feel kind of inadequate. And then Wes was aiming the other way, so he didn't see you.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. How you doing today?
Good.
Good?
Good. I could probably figure that out on a bass guitar.
Okay. It seems like that's there's some bass guitar
well, bass
in
guitar
there.
Bass guitar, you only play one note.
That's the thing. I need like
time.
The one note. If I had a guitar, I can do the one note. All right, here's this
but
note.
But it's a complex melody. So which would you pick out?
I can't say I can figure out the orchestra, like the whole
right.
thing. I can figure out the notes being played.
You can figure out the
it's
part.
Like if you listen to a song, if you are a bassist, you can hear the bass line very clearly. And you can, it's easy to pick out a bass line.
Yeah, or so. I can figure out the guitar notes or the chords, the notes that are being played, mm-hmm. and then create a bass line from there.
It's funny, even playing Rock Band like gave me I noticed the bass line and the drum lines after playing Rock Band. As somebody who's never really played instruments, much more after that, after playing a lot of Rock Band.
Like the relationship between the bass and the drums?
The bass and the drums.
Oh,
and
that's a green note.
You was never able to pick them out. No, not necessarily that, but just like I noticed it in music more. Like I would notice when, oh, this is a tricky bass line because like it's all over the place. It's kind of trilling and it's crazy. And I never would have ever noticed that before, I don't think.
Rock Band's fun.
I like Rock Band.
Yeah. 2008, Joey's it's Rock Band.
Rock Band's all right. This new game is fun.
Hey, 2007 to 2009. Rock Band Blitz came out last night. It's completely off topic, but I've Eric Pope sent me a code for that the other day, so I've been playing that for the last few nights, and it is awesome. Do you know what it is?
I am vaguely aware of this. Do I need to dig up my old instruments?
No instruments.
What am I doing?
Did you ever play Audio Surf, the PC game where you have like you put your music in your MP3 and it generates like a kind of Rock Band Guitar Hero style
track? Are you
saying
it's a rip off of Audio Surf?
No, I'm not.
Is that a flash game?
No, it's a real game. Oh. It was one of the first indie games on Steam.
No, I never played that.
So basically, what it is you have the track thing from Guitar Hero, right? Remember
or the highway.
Guitar Hero Rock Band, the Highway.
Yeah.
And you have
is
one
that what
section
it's called the Highway.
That's what I call it. I don't know. It might
really?
Be. Maybe there's
some lanes on the highway.
There's an
shipping
official
lanes.
Name for it, but it's not tracks or highway, I don't think.
All right.
Anyway.
I like the road.
You have one for each instrument in the song. So most of the songs, it's guitar, bass, drums, vocal, right? And there's some with keyboard as well. And basically, it's just a rhythm game for each of the instrument breakdowns. And you're not supposed to play – it's not a co-op game. You don't play with like four or five people. You literally just play the rhythm game, and it's all about tapping – left side, right side, in time with the rhythm for that instrument on each instrument, and then switching strategically to other instruments. So you'll play the guitar part for a little bit, and then you'll switch over to drums, and then you'll play bass, and then you'll switch over to vocal. And it's all about filling up meters in segments of the song so that you then open up higher levels of boost. And it's basically a leaderboard score game that's just incredibly – the leaderboard aspect of it is incredibly damaging.
Hmm.
Like it's the kind of thing that you set out and you look up and you're like, oh, I meant to play this for 20 minutes and it's been 4 hours. And I think it's an XBLA game. I don't know what it costs. But it came out last night really late. And it's been fun because the last couple of days the leaderboards have been four dudes or 20 or 30 people. And now at midnight I flipped over and all of a sudden all of the songs that I was like number 20 in the world on, I was somewhere in the 500s.
No longer worth playing.
I know. But yeah, that's out. What else? What have you been doing, Mr. Chan? What did you had an adventure this weekend? You vodka watermeloned on Friday.
Did not work.
Why didn't it work?
The vodka did not fill up the watermelon. It was not like
the watermelon
season 5 of 90210, where they filled watermelon up with vodka.
I didn't watch season 5 of 90210.
Is that the one where the kid shot himself?
I don't know.
Why do you know about why are
this is the reference I heard.
Oh, you flow was there.
That watermelon was filled with vodka on 90210.
Did someone get alcohol poisoning and have their stomach
pumped? We found a how-to on Huffington Post, and the how-to did not work. Apparently, sticking the neck of the vodka bottle into the watermelon.
So you're saying Huffington Post lied to you?
Did not. The video they embedded
from YouTube.
From YouTube did not show an accurate how-to for.
So the watermelon just didn't take. It just stayed sober.
It was more of a vodka splashed on watermelon. And the worst part is you empty out part of the cavity of a watermelon in order to get the nozzle in. And that's the best part of the watermelon.
Oh, and so you cored out the center?
You don't core out the center. You carve a little, like a ball from the center.
A hole.
You make a hole and then you carve out a little bit. So there's a reservoir. Think of it as a cave. You know, as if someone dug into the earth and created a cave and then plunged a giant vodka bottle into the earth and filled it up. And hopefully the vodka soaks into all the crevices of the watermelon. I guess it depends on from watermelon to watermelon, the sponginess of it. I like a spongy watermelon.
Do you think it was there was an airlock in the vodka bottle or something?
That was my suggestion. That was my thought. I thought that I needed some way for air to bubble into the bottle to refill it because air pressure is not enough to collapse and gravity isn't enough. But
you would think the watermelon would still just soak in the liquid, right?
But how does air fill back into the bottle? I mean, it's not a vacuum.
There is a vacuum at the top of it.
So there's air. The air that needs to be vodka needs to be replaced with air.
Yeah, or else it's just going to not come out of the bottle.
Yeah.
That's why you use a funnel normally because the funnel doesn't have an lock problem.
And both Safeway and Lucky's, the supermarkets in our local region do not sell funnels.
Really?
Yep. Surprising.
Your hardware store sells a funnel. I have bought a funnel at the hardware store by your house.
Did not visit the hardware
store. Hardware store is always the go-to place for funnels.
You know what also works?
What also works, Jerry?
Shots of vodka.
And bites of watermelon.
So you're there saying you put the watermelon in your mouth and then you do the
shot
of vodka?
And just wash it down. Wash the watermelon down with some vodka.
And do you light any of that on fire or not so much?
No, that's not flammable enough.
Not a good idea.
Is vodka flammable?
It burns like really quick. Like the alcohol burns off so fast on that. Hmm. On like, Bacardi 151.
You're saying it would make a very poor explosive device.
Yeah, you'd see a blue flame and nothing.
Isopropyl alcohol doesn't burn either.
What doesn't?
Isopropyl, the stuff you use to clean cuts and I mean, it kind of does, but not really. It doesn't get hot.
Neither does mouthwash.
Really? You tried to burn mouthwash? Why did you ever try to burn mouthwash?
I'm just saying mouthwash does not have enough alcoholic content to burn.
Okay, well, good talk, guys. See you all next week on another episode. So I think that the conversation we just had is marginally more interesting than what's to come. But the big story this week is about patents.
Cue the theme music.
Yeah. Samsung versus Apple went to trial. They had about a month of lawyers talking to the jury. The jury went into the deliberation room with a sheet of instructions that had like 700 different criteria. So it had instructions for three different companies, Samsung of America, Samsung of Korea, and one of the other, like Samsung is a conglomerate of dozens and dozens of companies. So the lawsuit was Apple versus three of Samsung's subsidiaries, basically.
Okay.
And they sued, Apple sued Samsung about over infringement on a handful of devices that are mostly kind of old at this point. It's all like Galaxy S1 and Galaxy S. I think there were a couple of Galaxy S2 phones in there. I can't remember. A lot of devices that are no longer even in production, really, or no longer for sale in the U.S.
But it wasn't about getting those phones off the shelves. It was about getting money.
Getting money and stopping Samsung from doing the same thing. Again, I think is probably what Apple would argue. So the criteria – I'm not going to get into it here because it's crazy complex. There was a really good breakdown on The Verge that
they
explains –
have lawyers.
Yeah, they have people who have law degrees and understand patents explaining the whole thing. And the gist is that Apple has patents on a lot of things, like all the way down to square icons with rounded corners.
And yeah, when Steve Jobs announced the iPhone and it pinched the zoom and everyone oohed and ahed and gasped, he says, and boy, did we patent the hell out of it.
He really wasn't kidding. Mm-hmm. Patents on everything.
2007.
So the jury verdict came in on Friday, which was kind of a surprise because I think people expected it to take a lot longer.
Jury did not want to stay over the weekend.
There's a lot of speculation that the jury was just fed up by this point and was just like, fuck it.
Hey, they got their show.
Yes. No. So the TLDR of the story, and if you want to know the specific details, then you should go read the Verge article because I think it's the best thing I read, is that basically, Apple won on all of the phone stuff. Everything that, with more or less, with a few exceptions, the majority of the phone arguments that they had, Samsung lost on. And a lot of the stuff was related directly to TouchWiz, not necessarily core Android UI. So if you recall, I'm not a big fan of the Galaxy S1 version of TouchWiz, which I think is probably the worst piece of phone software I've ever used.
So you're saying everything they did to make the phone worse actually came back to bite them in the ass.
To the tune of $1.05 billion.
Potentially more.
Potentially more. The tablet stuff, interestingly, the jury didn't. So a lot of the stuff was the jury deciding if the patents were valid. And first they decided if Samsung infringed the patents. Then they decided if the patents were valid. And then they awarded damages based on guidelines given by the judge. They decided that most of the infringement was valid. They decided that most of the patents were valid. And then they applied to and multiplied out to get $1.05 billion in damages, basically. Although, like Norm said, Apple is coming back and saying, hey, we want triple damages, which is some – there's a lot of legal stuff going on. So what does this mean to normal people?
You mean you can't buy Samsung stuff anymore?
No, not yet.
Oh. T-Mobile is still selling those Galaxy S3s.
A lot of the phones that were on the list are injuncted against now. So this is going to shock you, but Samsung won't be able to sell the Samsung Captivate in the U.S. anymore, which was a phone that came out in June of 2010 and hasn't been for sale in more than a year. So a lot of the phones from 2010, early 2011 aren't available anymore. They've been injuncted against. By the way, they haven't been on sale for 6 months anyway. So
those were previously injuncted against.
Yes. They were already injuncted.
Okay.
Yes.
And after the ruling?
That's going to stay the same, it seems like, but nobody cares because...
And the new phones?
It's unclear what it means for the new phones.
There are eight devices.
Yeah. They're unlikely. Obviously, the stuff that was directly ruled against in this case is going to not change. I would be shocked if TouchWiz comes out, the next version of TouchWiz comes out with square icons with rounded corners.
Is this good for innovation or bad for innovation?
I don't know.
The answer is it's good for innovation.
Really?
Yeah.
You think it's going to force people to try new things?
I think yes, absolutely.
I mean, so it seems like the biggest issue is that one of the things that was on the list of criteria that was ruled as a violation of Apple's patents is the rectangular phone with a solid face and a single button. That is a – if you look at early Android phones made by not Google. Google, I can't remember who did it, but there's a really good breakdown of the Nexus devices made by companies that weren't Samsung showing, look – like the Nexus One, HTC designed in such a way that it broke up the lines on the front of the phone, so it looks like it's two-toned. And there's
even the very first Nexus,
on.
You know, we're talking about
the Nexus One,
the very first Nexus or the very first HTC Android phone,
the G1.
The G1 had the, you know, little nub balls and stuff, and
yeah, trackball and stuff like that. They moved closer, and then they've now moved further away again. I think probably. Other thing that's going to happen is probably the Galaxy Tab 10.1 is going to be on sale again shortly. So that has not been available for a while. I don't really think people care because I think they sold like 35,000 of those or something. But, mm-hmm. You know, just in case. I think Google – I don't think it's going to mean a whole lot for Android. I think that there's a lot of speculation from people that think it might cost more now for manufacturers to manufacture Google devices – because they have to license patents from all sorts of different places, even more places than before.
Google says it really doesn't affect them because the stuff that Samsung did was on top of Android and it wasn't stock Android. The alphabetical listing of apps not on the home screen is very different from the way Apple did things. And people,
especially a vertical scrolling and all that stuff.
Horizontal scrolling, vertical scrolling, and having widgets on the homepage, like that, all the stuff that makes Android really good now, that's none of that infringes on Apple's patents.
I mean, the only thing that is kind of universal is the rectangular design of the phone with a very small limited number of buttons on the home screen. Now Android doesn't have any physical buttons on the front. It's all, I mean, for the most part. It's all soft buttons built into the screen, the capacitive touchscreen. So,
are most of these things that they violate are they as pedantic as softened edges and rounded stuff? I mean, is it?
Yep.
So it's not. It's doesn't
intangibles. Little. Yep.
It's a lot of it's stuff that they call that's called design trim, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm going to explain this badly, and you guys can give me shit about it in the comments. But basically, it is the type of the small design touches that indicate that indicate kind of brand awareness that Apple spends. So one of the things that they talked about in the trial was the amount of money that Apple has spent marketing iPhone and iPad. And whether that constituted a design that was kind of universally recognized as Apple-y design. And so that's when you're talking about things like square icons with rounded corners, that's what they're talking about. And it sounds super pedantic. The counter argument to that is whether these ideas are concepts that are universal and important enough that you can't build a device the other way, in which case if there's a patent then they're required to license it out according to a set of arcane rules that I don't pretend to understand.
Did Motorola ever patent flip phone technology?
I have no idea.
Flip phones?
The flip, the one that they invented?
Having a phone that flips open?
That unfolds vertically, typically? Yeah.
SmartTech.
StarTech.
StarTech, that's what I had.
The example of the thing that is universal is the steering wheel. So, you know, even though Knight Rider looked really cool with that partial circle steering wheel, it's no good because you can't do hand-over-hand turns with it. Like, nobody makes square steering wheels or triangular steering wheels or has a pole with a stick on it that comes out that you spin around, you know, like you're stirring a pot of dough or something.
A yoke.
Yeah, yokes. Nobody uses a flight stick to steer a car.
Oh.
Imagine if you could use head tracking to steer a car. So yeah, the steering wheel is something that even if somebody had patented it, of course it was invented at a time before we were patenting every stupid idea. It would end up being something that the patent office would require them to license for a fair fee.
Need more innovation in steering technology.
Well, that's the, you know,
increased competition.
Have you seen the self-driving cars yet? They're out there.
They don't even need steering wheels. I want gesture base, pinch to zoom, pinch to accelerate.
I want you just want to use Google Voice and say
slide to accelerate.
Google, drive me to work.
Yeah, giant ball. Why not a ball-based steering?
Yeah.
What if the wheels are balls?
I don't like how it's going. Crazy.
Then the car can go in any direction you want. It doesn't have to turn.
Wow, change direction. Mag balls.
Yeah, mag ball wheels. Get on it, people.
No, you parallel park like crazy with those.
Yeah, you don't even have to parallel park.
Did you not see Dark Knight Rises? The tumbler thing? Yeah, the wheels, they spun.
Mm. Wheels do spin, Norm. Mm. Wheels do spin.
All axes.
So yeah, probably not a whole lot of change in the short term. I think that
Microsoft high five in itself.
Yeah, Microsoft feels really good because part of their licensing deal with Apple was that they would stay away from certain of these core design ideas, and one of them was the square icons with rounded corners.
They just went for square.
Yeah, they just went pure blocks. So yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if the section in the Jobs biography about finding no square corners in nature and that being one of the core tenets of OS, Mac OS design philosophy from the early 80s on, was added thinking about this eventuality, right, about that patent.
Yeah. I think it's arbitrary either way. The thing that Samsung really got busted on is the willful violation of these patents.
Explain.
That it wasn't a coincidence that they violated the patents. They did it on purpose to mislead consumers into believing their products were the iPhone.
Hold on, wait. You mean they made TouchWiz look like the iPhone so that people would pick it up and think, oh, this is an iPhone. I should buy this because iPhone is good.
I could not imagine like being in that scenario, walking in a store, ever confusing a Samsung product with an iPhone, with an Apple product.
Have you seen the Galaxy Tab 10.1?
I couldn't do it.
You're an informed consumer.
Exactly. I don't know. I can't put myself in the mind of an uninformed consumer.
Of a chud, as it were.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what they said. Basically, that was why the penalties were so high, and unlike like the typical FCC penalty, $1 billion is a substantial sum of money, even to a company the size of Samsung.
Yeah, obviously, Samsung as a big company, $1 billion isn't going to ruin them. They do lose a lot of money in their stock price the following Monday. And Samsung wants to resolve this quickly because its other divisions work with Apple as partners, so not competitors.
Yeah, I mean, Samsung provides flash memory, has provided CPUs in the past, has manufactured CPUs in the past, and they. I read an article in The Economist about the internal firewall at Samsung where the people that worked in the consumer products division, the phone division, have no idea at all what's going on. Like, they're treated by the manufacturing division the same way that the manufacturing division treats Apple, the people who provide flash memory and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. The story of Apple and Samsung together has been going on for a long time because Samsung provided a lot of the flash memory, and Samsung – because of Apple's investment in flash with the iPod Nano specifically and the Shuffle later, they ramped up production of flash memory and thus brought the price down of flash memory a lot, maybe earlier than it would have happened otherwise.
Someone put it really funny on Twitter because Apple paid Samsung about $3.5 billion last year to buy parts for its products, and now it's getting $1 billion back. It's like a Groupon.
Buy two, get one free.
Get the rebate.
Yeah. Nice rebate.
These are just two massive companies just doing some...
We're talking about the biggest company in the world.
And another top 50 probably. Yeah. I don't know.
But Samsung really doesn't care about... I mean, a lot of the stuff... this ruling just applies to sales in the US, and Apple is suing Samsung also in other countries, UK, Australia, New Zealand. Samsung really doesn't care about that because it owns the Asian market, and that's where it's still number one smartphone phone maker in the world. And Apple in the Asian market, which is rapidly growing, is only number seven for a variety of reasons. So in the long run, Samsung's going to be fine. And I think it will encourage them to innovate.
So Google is suing Apple.
Yes.
It's not retaliatory, but just coincidentally happened to happen at the end of this giant Samsung-Apple case, which was to do with Android and stuff and things. Google is seeking an injunction blocking Apple imports of pretty much everything that they sell except for a couple of Macs. And of course, since Apple manufactures everything in China, that would be of detriment to their business for fairly obvious reasons. There are seven patents involved in the Google suing Apple case. It seems like a lot of them they're all Motorola patents. And they're ones that Motorola developed internally, not things that Motorola acquired. And I picked a couple of the ones that look more interesting. But the big ones are have to do with geographical or temporal gating of tasks. Things like the reminders reminding you when you leave your house, hey, don't forget to get milk when you're on your way to work or something like that.
Very cool feature.
A very cool feature. Yes. Notification control and filtering. So I would assume that this would be infringing all the way back to the beginning of the notification manager in iOS, which means anytime you go into that thing and instead of having you have a big long list of all the apps that have notifications and can control them on an app-by-app basis.
And something I thought would actually be useful in iOS 5, and I actually never use it at all.
Really?
On the iPhone or the iPad.
Oh, I just use it to turn everything off except for the four things I actually need notifications for.
It's one of those things I thought would be super cool, but Google does it so much better. Notifications.
I love having the centralized resource in iOS.
It's not about centralized resource.
I'm saying for management. I'm saying the thing that I don't like about Android is that you have to go into each app and figure out how they handle notifications.
Oh, you're talking
on
about
a per app
in the
basis,
settings.
Yeah. Rather than having a centralized repository
that's
for that information.
Super easy fix for Android if they ever want to do that.
Assuming it's not protected by some bullshit patent that Apple
has. Extremely bullshit patent.
Yes.
But something simple like in Android, to get rid of a notification, you pull down the notifications bar and can swipe individual notifications away.
That's good.
With an action.
You can do that with iOS too.
Or you can just hit the X and everything.
You hit the one and everything disappears. Yeah. In iOS, you hit an X. There's no gesture to remove individual things.
So you have to X out every single notification?
Yep. It's no, you X out by category. I never use when I was talking about,
never use notifications.
When I was talking about the notification center, what I was talking about was the settings pane in notification in for notifications. This thing right here.
You're talking about like how I want to set
the thing that controls the notification center.
Yeah.
Okay, but the notification center itself.
You're talking about the notifications.
The notification center is what the thing is called when you pull it down. That is the notification center. Yes.
I thought it was just called notifications.
No. Notification center
is called notification highway.
This is
super highway.
When you drag down on your iPad or iPhone, yeah. That is a notification center.
See, the only place I ever use notifications is on the lock screen where you can slide to remove them or go jump straight into what you're looking at. So I use the ones that pop up on the lock screen. That's I never ever pull the top thing.
And also on iOS, you don't see, when notifications pop up, right? You see the top, like, you know, 20 pixels rotate.
Yeah.
That weird funky animation, new text messages. That's kind of useful, but things build up, and on Android, you have little icons, and on Windows Phone, you have little icons indicating, okay, there are four little Twitter icons. You got four new tweets. So on iOS, that's not there.
Well, it just shows the four things.
No, it shows nothing on top of taskbar.
Oh, not on the taskbar. You're correct.
Taskbar is useful space.
Let's see. Notification control and filtering and an input element that allows an audible prompt to be converted into a text string. That only infringes on the 4S.
You're talking about Siri.
I'm talking about an input element that allows an audible prompt to be converted to a text string. I think it's referring to the little microphone button that you can do text-to-speech with.
Hmm.
But that seems crazy, crazy broad. Like, it seems audible like Dragon naturally sounds speaking
like,
would be.
Sounds like you got to make a command as opposed to just pure text-to-speech.
Well, I guess that's true. I mean, an audible prompt in the case of Siri would be the little doo-doot, doo-doot, you know, the chime that starts at the beginning. I don't know. The point
semantics.
Is lawyers. Aww. You know who gets really rich on all this? Lawyers.
Lawyers?
Lawyers. And expert witnesses, it turns out. Expert witnesses make bank. Ooh. If you can calculate, if you can, yeah, I know.
Can you have your career as, you can, yeah, I guess there are people who are careers as.
I'm an expert witness.
I know
like
a couple.
Expert psychiatrists, right? Like, this is exactly, this person has schizophrenia. They're crazy.
I know people whose career is expert witness. Like they can calculate damages. So they know how much money, say, Apple is losing as a result of Samsung's infringement.
Right. In my experience,
that's how it all starts.
It's all data driven. They look at sales and they look at this much and they look at that and they look at this sales versus that. And
it's all a simple Excel formula.
Yeah. Type in. Exactly. It's like the Tyler Durden formula. And then the last thing in patent apocalypse 2012 is that HTC has come out and said, no, Apple's suing us. Fuck that. We're not settling. Let's go to the mat. They're not afraid.
HTC's not afraid?
HTC shows no fear.
Well, HTC
should be scared shitless.
And they're losing a ton of money.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's pretty lame.
HTC, the company that spent $40 million investing in OnLive.
Hey, what a perfect segue into talking about OnLive laying all of their employees off, transferring the company and the IP to a third-party company, and then hiring back like 20 or 30 people, maybe 60 people of the 300 that used to work there. So OnLive, still up, the service. OnLive, we've talked about it a lot in the past.
OnLive, which in 2008 launched at GDC, actually took a meeting with Steve Perlman and I guess their PR person, Tiffany Spencer, back when they were not OnLive. I guess right before they launched, they were in their incubator.
Before they announced the name.
They were at a tech incubator in San Francisco working on the compression technology to show that this worked. And we all got a sense that we knew this could be super cool as long as the business model is right. And the business model was never right.
They fucked up the business model over and over again. Because, I mean, the big problem I had with the service when they launched was that they charged a fairly high monthly fee, like $10 or $12 a month, MMO-level monthly fee, at a time when people were already tired of paying MMO monthly fees. And then they – in order – that was just to use the service.
Let's take a step back and talk about what the service does.
This is a good point.
OnLive was the streaming video game service where instead of having a high-end PC or buying an Xbox, you know, spending $300 on an Xbox, you could through your computer, web browser, or software on your computer, or a $100 dedicated micro console, stream full video games just over your broadband connection. And their claim was that based on the average, they showed a ton of statistics on broadband penetration in the U.S., what the average bit rates, average pings were. They built these data centers.
No, they tapped into existing data centers.
Yeah, they rented data centers, invested in data centers. They bought a lot of space in data centers.
Yes.
To run their software to basically say, okay, you don't need a $2,000 PC, gaming PC. You can have any computer you want, whether it's a MacBook Air, an iPad, a Ultrabook, even a netbook or an iPhone, and play something like Unreal Tournament 3. You can play Crysis, which they demoed a lot, and a bunch of other PC games.
And all the heavy lifting is done on their side?
All the heavy lifting, server-side rendering, is done on the server, and it would just stream the video. But they think that based on your latency, because they had data centers all over the country.
They had 7 or 8 data centers.
The latency wouldn't be bad enough that you couldn't play. You could still play. It would be responsive enough that a signal from a controller in your hand will go to the micro console, go to your router, go to their data center, process, and come back. It's a TV screen as compressed 720p video, and it'd be just like playing the game in real time, even on a Twitch-based shooter.
So how did it work, Norm?
The latency wasn't the problem.
I thought the latency was the problem.
No, the latency wasn't the problem. It was compression was the problem.
I thought both latency and compression were the problem.
I playing a game like Crysis was fine.
So shooters were fine in my experience. Anything that was fast, like racers and things like playing Need for Speed was hard to play. You would constantly feel like your TV. It was like when you would play Rock Band and you hadn't calibrated your TV right, so the notes were coming a third of a second behind.
You could not play Rock Band on this.
Right. You couldn't play
something
a fighting game.
Something would require less than 50 milliseconds of latency. You could not do on this.
Right.
And then there was some video compression, obviously, and it was based on your broadband connection, relying on your broadband connection. So if someone started downloading a huge movie or something on your network, then the service could possibly be interrupted. But there was a lot of really cool potential data technology behind that with their interface, because everything was video. So they could have software on their side, and basically they could show you like a wall of every single game being played on their service at once. Yeah. All the videos recorded. So it's all video. So you could do playback, you record clips. And so they thought that was enough to charge you a monthly subscription service for all this benefit.
And they gave free time limited demos of stuff as well.
And free time, and no downloading, 2 gigs, 3 gigs for a game demo. You get to play, it'd be time based game demos, running using server time. Yep. But they would still sell you the games at full prices. So for example, you could buy a game like Homefront or Batman Arkham Asylum, $50, $60. Basically the PC version of the game adapted for on life, because it's all running on PCs, and pay your $5 to $10 a month service for a game that if you ever got off their service, you would just lose access to the game.
Wow.
And so that, as you can imagine, was not very appealing for the vast majority of gamers.
It was as if you subscribed to Xbox Live and any of the games you bought it's like the PlayStation Plus deal, except you're also paying for the games.
So because they had to work with game publishers to actually get games ported to the online service, and they were all PC games.
It was an easy porting process, is my understanding.
Not easy porting process. They said it was an easy porting process, but it was not, because they had to change all the settings stuff, all the save mechanisms had to be adapted.
Oh, right. Okay.
It was easier than and it was easy, relatively easy for existing PC games, but like console games never went on live. Like console only games, you never had a Halo on live.
Right? What's the monthly service on this?
There was a monthly service. They realized quickly that wasn't going to happen. That wasn't going to work. So they got rid of the monthly service, and then also added later on a Netflix style. Pay a monthly fee, but you get like a all you can eat, list of games.
Yeah,
but not all the games. The thing is, they never had apparently more than 1,600 people playing on live games at once.
Well, so we learned a lot of things. There was a Verge article written by Sean Hollister that came out earlier this week that, it made some wild accusations about the founder of the company's behavior and decision-making ability and things like that.
I don't want to get in that. They never overcame certain technical challenges.
Yeah, there were two really interesting things that came out of that story.
They never got the virtual computing working on the server. So every time you played a game, you would take up one server.
One machine.
One machine on their server farm, so they could never scale to, if the service, if the business model is right, they could never scale to millions of people playing at once if they ever got this in hotel rooms and in like in TVs, built into TVs and built into set-top consoles like they wanted to. It would never work that way.
Basically, it seems like there was no way for them to get out of the problems that they'd built with their service. Yes. And the implication was also that when other companies came and looked to acquire them, they dug deep into how it worked and then either were interested or when they started asking the wrong questions, they were run off.
Well, I mean, HTC invested $40 million on their in OnLive because they wanted exclusive OnLive on their phones. So, right. Well, HTC also has a deal with Beats, but
so does HP.
So does HP. But imagine if you had gotten a phone, HTC phone, and one of the selling points was buy an HTC phone and you get access to, you know, Crysis and all these cool games with touch controls over Wi-Fi, streaming over Wi-Fi, exclusive access.
Yeah,
that's appealing.
Crysis with touch controls doesn't sound good to me.
Well, other games.
Okay,
you know. Good looking games.
The upshot is they built a really kind of neat service that seemed to be a little smoke and mirrors. I mean, the single machine thing is amazing because in a world where everything else is going virtualized and is like literally when you buy an Amazon server, what you're buying is a instanced machine that runs on a like a.
Well, you can do that because it's running. You're instancing it on the CPU,
right?
And because when you're talking about games, you can't instance. You can't run multiple games at the same time. There's no software that lets you do that on
virtualized GPU. GPU is something that nobody's really done yet.
Well, NVIDIA is trying to do it, but they're doing their own thing with it. Yeah.
So smoke and mirrors.
Really. And the crux of their technology was video compression technology, low latency video compression technology, and ability to take that video data and do fun things with it. And if they had, you know, went not just done gaming, but use that, you know, jumped into some type of YouTube Vimeo style competitor, some type of, you know,
Live streaming
or video distribution, movie distribution service. There could be a huge potential for that.
Yeah. So as it is right now, the service is still up. It hasn't gone away yet.
It sounds a little shady in how
the transition.
Yeah. How all the employees were laid off and people who had paid money for stock, their stock is worth nothing. And the company was sold for, I think, $4 million when there were tens and tens of millions of dollars invested into the company. And a competitor, Gaikai, was bought by Sony just months ago for $380 million.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that my hunch is, and this is speculation, is that because they had built a platform that they couldn't scale without adding one machine per user, people who were looking at purchasing suddenly were no longer interested when they found that out. That is really, really bad.
Yep. There are some cool sounding ideas in there.
It's really neat. Yeah, yeah. Tons of neat ideas.
It just doesn't sound like a viable business
model. Big booths at PAX and GDC, and I think E3 too, right?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
They're giving away those micro consoles by the end of OnLive, just desperate for people to use it.
1,600 simultaneous users.
Current users.
Is not real good.
Yeah.
Sony announced a whole bunch of stuff today.
Yes, they did. Sony announced a 4K TV.
Okay. Is it the 3D one?
I don't know if it has 3D, but it is.
No glasses 3D is the one that
I saw at
CES.
No. That was at.
What was one?
That was at NAB.
Toshiba.
What was one the log run?
Oh,
that's
sharp.
That's an 8K.
That was an 8K TV.
Oh, that's right.
That's a little further in the future. That was a TV with 16 HDMI cables plugged in for one image. And there's only one camera in the world that shoots in 8K.
There's probably more than that now.
Maybe two cameras in the world that shoot in 8K, and they're all in Japan.
Couldn't you take like 8 reds and make that work? You put them in a big grid?
I do not think you could. A grid of red sensors and one big lens?
Yeah.
I don't think that's how cameras work.
Makes perfect sense.
I'm not sure exactly if that is how a camera works. So Sony announced an 84-inch 8K, a 4K TV, which I want very badly.
It's a big TV.
It's an LCD panel, and that's 3840 by 2160. So 2160p, that is enough. That is the same number of horizontal lines as there are vertical lines. No, more than that. Not maybe
1920 by 1080. It's almost double. Yeah. It's double and resolution. It's four 1080p resolutions packed into one 84-inch TV.
Yes. And it's there is 3D in that with 3D glasses.
Just about.
Yeah.
But they demoed that, and there is no pricing or availability yet. It will be on sale later this year in North America.
$10,000. That's my guess.
Select retail locations later this year.
Oh, wait, no, Sony. $15,000.
Which means I'm going to pay a visit to select retail locations.
You're going to go to Sony style? Are there still Sony style stores?
I don't think so.
Those are all gone,
you know,
right?
Is Palo Alto, maybe. There was last one I know was like the Stanford Mall.
There's a Sony store?
Sony style,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah, you could go see the Aibo. Did either of you ever use, did you use an Aibo ever?
I never owned one. I've used one.
We had one. Logan called one in at Max PC one year. And it was real dumb. Super duper dumb.
I would want one right now.
I would totally
What
take
is this
one.
Word? What is this?
It's a robot dog. Sony's robot dog.
They had two versions. The second
Three
Aibo.
Versions.
Three versions. Of the last Aibo they ever made was kind of cool.
He could chase a pink ball or anything pink.
Why pink?
It was because that was the color he was programmed color to chase. Yeah.
So if someone came in with a pink dress, they would
It would try to kill them. It was a small bug with the software, but it all worked out in the end.
All right.
So, anything else interesting? They announced
a 4K TV, which I will want to visit Best Buy or wherever it is just to look at, just to appreciate, just to visualize the future.
So hold on. If you do that, though, you know what's going to happen. You're going to not ever want to watch your TV again. It's going to be inadequate and shit to you.
No, it doesn't work that way because when I go to stores to look at TVs, I go up real close. And so the pixel density is higher, is lower at that range. So I sit real close to it. I don't ever, there's no, yeah, it'll be fine. I'm pretty
okay
with my TV.
You're comfortable.
Less interesting, they announced a new Tablet S with
Android
tablet.
Huh?
Android tablet, running Android 4.0.
Really?
Yeah.
Ice cream sandwich?
Yeah.
Ew.
Not super interested in that.
How big?
We know. Capacity?
No. How big a screen? Is it 7-inch or 10-inch?
I think it's 10-inch.
Ew.
And
W.
Two things that are kind of interesting. One is they have now a GoPro competitor. So
an action camera.
It's actually called the Action Cam.
What is it? I haven't heard about this. Is it Sony?
Just now today. And it actually looks a lot like the Contour camera. We saw it in NAB. So Contour is the one that looks more like
tubular.
Yeah, it's just like a.
It looks like the old
cylinder like a, with a. What is that shape?
It looks like the original Apple FireWire cam.
It looks like the Predator's gun.
Yes, but what is that? It's got to be a name for the
cylinder.
Shape. No, it's a cylinder, a long cylinder. If you stretch
oblong
out a cylinder,
an ovoid.
I don't know. There's got
to
be a
pointy
geometric
ends or
name.
Is it
no.
Ends.
Imagine what is a cylinder combined with a rectangular cylinder, as if you took a cylinder and stretched it out.
But I think a cylinder is a like a.
Right, but if you stretch the circle, so it's not a circle, but so it's
like an elliptical cylinder.
Oh, an oval cylinder.
Cylinders are ovals. Elliptical cylinder. it's an action cam, which is cheaper than the GoPro, $200 as opposed to the $250 to $300 that GoPros go for now.
Okay.
And it's very comparable. You got 1080p. It goes up to 120 FPS at 720p. HDMI out. Comes with a waterproof casing.
What is the frame? What can it do frame rate wise?
I think it does 1080p at 60, and it'll go down to 720p 30 at 120. I think
it will do 120.
120 FPS at 720p for the high speed stuff.
Okay,
slow motion stuff.
So it's basically the same thing the GoPro does.
Pretty much, except the GoPro. You know, GoPro always looks weird. It's lighter than the GoPro.
Okay.
GoPro is a weird shape because
it's square.
It's a boxy shape. And it's boxy because they want you to buy accessories, like you can buy the LCD to put in the back or the Wi-Fi backpack to put in the back.
Well,
it's
and
made
all the cases
for accessories and casing,
it's
of
like
course.
It's like semi-modular.
Yeah. These are less modular. Like the Contour is not very modular and the Sony one isn't that modular. There are two models of the Sony. One has Wi-Fi, one doesn't. The Wi-Fi one will let you download an app and control it like the Wi-Fi backpack does for the GoPro. It's $70 more. No mic in. Line in. I don't know if people really need the line in, I guess, for these cameras because you're just going to put some, you know, some Pearl Jam, I guess, with your video anyway.
Well, and if you put it in a waterproof case or something,
you're not
going to
hear it.
The line in is useless because you can't plug it in.
I've never used the line in on the GoPros.
It's useful if you want to like live stream because you have HDMI out and then if you want to attach to a mic, I don't know.
Oh, that's a good point.
You mean
if you want to record,
so like if we took out this, if we took
if we
the out
the
on this mixer. into a quarter jack.
It's a terrible idea.
No. I guess not live stream, but if you wanted to narrate your videos.
Hi, I'm Will from Tested.
Have really good narration. Like you could lob up.
But
or,
you would do that all. Yeah, I mean, I guess as a portable microphone.
Yeah, if you want, like, if you are snowboarding and you are saying, "Oh my God, this is so cool," or narrating where you're going.
You want
to
put narration over your Nickelback?
Exactly.
I want to just play Nickelback over my Nickelback
while recording the video.
I guess there are uses. Yes,
I used the HDMI out with the 3D camera, for what it's worth.
There is HDMI out in this
not with the third person.
There
camera.
Is a mini HDMI.
There is a mini HDMI out, uses mini SD cards, and the pricing, I think, is the best thing about this is $200. So these kind of action cameras,
so it's $100 off the GoPro,
way more affordable.
We should do some side by sides.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, right. Some Contour, GoPro, and Sony Action Cam. That's coming out later this month in September.
When is it? Okay.
And the most exciting thing from Sony today.
You mean next month? It's August still.
Oh, it is. Later in August. The most exciting thing is the upgrade to the Sony NEX5N, which is the Sony NEX5R. Now, if anyone was looking to get a mirrorless camera in the next 2 months, this is one potentially to look at.
Did I make a bad mistake buying a 5N in June?
Did you get use out of it?
I love my 5N.
Did you get $100 worth of use, extra $100 worth of use?
Well, I couldn't buy the C3 when I bought the 5N, so... neither the C3 nor the
F3. If you love
F3.
It, then there's no reason, then you didn't make a bad choice.
What's the upgrade? What does it do?
Yeah, what's the new camera?
I have the C3, an NEX C3, which came out last August, and I love that. Super tiny. The 5N came out at the same time, and the big difference between the 5N and the C3 was the 5N did 1080p video recording and also had a touchscreen for touch-to-focus.
Neither of which I use the 1080p sometimes. The touch to focus I never use because it's always easier to do the ring focus.
And then this year, Sony changed the C3 to the F3, which we did a review of. And that one was a little bigger, had the flip up screen, also did 1080p video, and also had the built in flash, which I thought was stupid, not useful. The 5R replaces the 5N, but adds three things that make it actually a really cool upgrade. One, they added a manual control dial on the top. A rotating dial.
Oh, so there's two dials now.
In the back, previously the C3 and the 5N and the F3 have like that ring in the back where you do the settings on. Usually if you're in aperture mode, that sets your iris, right? Your F value. Or if you're in shutter priority, that sets your shutter. So it's your fine-tuned control.
But so can you do both at the same time now?
So now you have two dials.
But so on the old camera, you have to go into like a digital menu, right?
In the old camera, if you want to change ISO exposure, you click a shortcut and then you still rotate the dial.
Right. So for
now
example,
you have two dials.
But is the dial like on like older style cameras where it actually has
clicks?
Yeah,
there are no clicks.
So it still goes into the digital menu.
There are clicks on the
dials in the new 5R. The new top dial is the same style of dial in the NEX7. Which had two dials on top, and they are non-clicky. They are just smooth dials because it's digital. And they're no hard stops. They just go all the way around. But they're programmable with the function key, so you can program one dial to change ISO and one dial to change aperture if you want. I think that's extremely useful, a physical addition. The second thing they added was they changed the sensor. So even though it's still a 16-megapixel sensor, they added a phase detection focus, autofocus. So in all of Sony's previous mirrorless cameras and many other mirrorless cameras, it's all contrast-based focus, autofocus, which means the camera kind of refocuses real fast. You know when you hold the camera shutter button halfway down, before you get the green beep-beeps and the focus points, it kind of like moves back and forth a little bit.
Yeah.
Like the focus moves back and forth. That's because it's taking images and then processing it and then trying to find the edges of the image to find the edge detect. So that's why you have the peaking, right? The peaking outlines. Contrast-based auto detect is in the sensor where it takes two sensor inputs. So you hit light from two slightly different angles through the lens, so they're slightly out of phase, and they compare those images to see what is in focus and what isn't.
So it looks at like adjoining pixels on the sensor.
Yes, it's within one pixel on the sensor. You can detect two different parts.
So there's really scary math involved.
Really scary math, but it's much faster than contrast detect. Autofocus. And the advantage of phase detect is that you can actually...
You're saying phase detect, right?
It's phase detection, okay. Autofocus. The advantage of that is that you can do autofocus while shooting a video, and it's much faster for burst shooting. And this is new for Sony's mirrorless cameras. It's on like some of Olymp. I think Olympus has it, and I want to say Fuji has it maybe on some of their mirrorless cameras. But it's something that's typically reserved for the higher end cameras. So this is actually really good. You get faster focus, which is good all around. And then also they added apps on app support with Wi-Fi. So the 5R has Wi-Fi built in.
Ooh.
And you can download Sony design apps. So there's no SDK out right now. But these apps are not mandatory at all. So if you wanted to go into the menu, you can, there's a new shortcut that says applications. You click it, and then there are applications like, you know, I'll help you take a time lapse. Here, you know, here are your settings. Set your settings here. Click start.
And oh, that's
time
really
lapse
cool.
Will happen. Or bracketing, or if you want to do like photo filter stuff, they also have that.
Can you write your own apps?
You cannot write your own apps.
Oh, so it's only Sony apps.
It's only Sony apps for now.
Hmm. Does it run an OS or something?
Does not run an OS. Does not run Android, thankfully.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting.
Both Nikon and Samsung had announced cameras in the week, this past week, that run Android, and I think that's stupid.
Is it bigger like the F3?
It is same size as the 5N.
Oh, nice. Okay. So that's good. Let's see. Samsung announced a ton of stuff too. I haven't had a chance to go down this list yet. The couple of things I noticed though were that the Galaxy Note 2 is coming by the end of this year, and it's going to be even bigger.
5.5 inches.
That's crazy.
5.5 inches.
Is that a phone or a tablet?
It's phone, tablet. It's Galaxy Note.
I don't understand. What kind of pockets do you have to fit a 5.5? Do you remember when we were at CES and I took that Galaxy Note off of the stand? And the PR woman started completely freaking out because it had the wire attached to it, and I was trying to put it in my pocket, and she started yelling.
Mm-hmm. It is
that was really
it's
uncomfortable.
A tablet. It's not a phone; it's a tablet,
but it has a phone
it's
in
a
it,
small
right?
Small tablet with a stylus. They bumped up the processor 1.4 to 1.6 gigahertz. You know, 2 gigs of RAM instead of 1 gig of RAM.
Do you have to buy it from AT&T or Verizon?
I don't think so.
Oh, so it's no cellular modem now.
No. There's definitely a cellular modem. I'm not sure who the partners are. It's not available in the U.S.
It was very popular. The first Galaxy Note, just to be clear, even though I kind of think it's dumb,
the first
a
Galaxy
lot of people
Note,
really
yeah.
like the first oh, yeah. Galaxy Note. You got some crazy hair there.
People want the stylus
video
to take notes on their tablets.
Yeah. Gina's really excited. She's wanted one since day one. So I just said no.
This is just a tablet for writing things?
It has a pen. It has a stylus.
No carrier announcements yet, but they expect both HSPA Plus and LTE models.
Okay. Great. Good news, everyone. A bunch of other Samsung stuff was announced. I'm not going to go down it. Oh, one last thing at the Sony talk. They said that they're backing away from the split screen tablets because people didn't like them. You know, the folding tablet.
Oh, yeah. The DS
no surprise.
Tablet. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Anything else from the Samsung thing you want to hit, Norm, before I move on?
Not really. They announced that Galaxy phone or Galaxy camera. So runs Android. It really looks like a point and shoot that has Android in the back, and it again has like some type of home screen.
Do they do cameras in other markets, and I just didn't know about it? Or is this their first point and shoot camera?
Samsung?
Yeah.
No, of course they have tons of cameras.
They do cameras?
Yeah. Samsung has tons of cameras.
I don't really pay attention to cameras.
Is it mostly point and shoot?
No, they have a mirrorless camera. And yeah.
Okay. President Obama did an AMA today. Coincidentally, it's election season. Yeah. I wasn't able to get into Reddit to see what the AMA was about, but it had like 12,000 comments the last time I looked, which is seems like a lot.
I don't think it had that many comments, but Anthony answered maybe a dozen questions at most, including who's his favorite basketball player?
Who was his favorite basketball player?
Michael Jordan. He's a Bulls fan.
Wow.
What does the White House beer taste like?
11 comments right now.
What? He was
15,000 upvotes. That is a lot of upvotes.
Yeah.
Good karma day.
The worst thing was that his verification photo was just him sitting on a computer. It would look like just a bad photo of Obama sitting on a computer.
But he wasn't holding up a little sign or anything?
He wasn't looking at the camera. Not even looking or smiling at the camera.
Did
he? Him pensive at a computer.
Did he have the president?
No sign that said, "Hi Reddit, I am President Obama."
Did he have the
He made one president, one Reddit joke.
Which one was
it? Like, what do I think about this Reddit? Not bad. Which was
oh really?
Which is the Obama not bad
from the British visit meme. Or whatever? Yeah. Hmm. He got
so
a
I guess,
lot of karma.
I guess that's worth it. And that meme now has come to an end. When Obama uses his own meme, on Reddit in AMA for a presidential campaign. The Ouroboros has completed, and it is almost as bad as when on the Macy's Day Thanksgiving or New Year's Day parade.
No, it was Thanksgiving.
Macy's Day parade what's his name? See, I'm so glad I don't remember.
Rick Springfield.
Never. I'm so glad. I don't want to.
Rick Rolled.
Let you down.
What's his name?
Never gonna. Rick.
You just been Rick Rolled.
Rick Perry.
Rick, no. Rick Perry is a politician. No. No, don't Google that. It is. Rick Springfield is Jesse's girl, right?
Rick Springfield?
Jesse's girl.
When did today's show Rick Rolled everyone?
It wasn't the Today Show. It was the Macy's Day Parade.
Yeah,
I came across a YouTube video that was a Rick Roll and
Rick Astley.
I giggled.
God damn it! Now he's back. He's relevant again.
Never gonna give you up. That one. Yeah.
So Obama doing a Reddit AMA.
Maybe that's his way of saying, "Hey, I'm tired of this meme. You guys should drop this shit now."
Yeah. Be more innovative.
Somebody said anyway. Yeah. I just think it's really funny that when you go to his profile page on Reddit, it says, "Buy President Obama a month of Reddit gold." That's super weird. And also, he has Reddit gold. So I guess somebody did buy him Reddit gold. Yeah. So that's weird. I'm looking at the questions he answered. It's working again. There's a fair number of serious things about like recent graduates from college. You should just go to the site. It's on the top of Reddit. It'll be there for probably a week at the... If I had to guess,
I don't like how
it's kind of pandering.
I don't like that. I like Reddit AMAs and the people who are sincere, like Terry Crews did an AMA last night, and it was
fantastic,
awesome. And Terry Crews had inspirational messages, and you could tell that, you know, I mean, you don't know obviously whether it's him or a PR person, but it felt genuine and it was funny. And he talked about all his roles and how he got started. And I feel like a lot of people do it right and a lot of people do it wrong and use it for publicity. And to be fair, the Terry Crews one was also to promote his new Old Spice ad.
But didn't he also announce a follow up to his role in Idiocracy?
No.
Was that not part of that?
There was no announcement.
Oh.
Sylvester Stallone does a lot of these.
Sylvester Stallone is very of the people. He's really good friends with Harry Knowles. And so he'll like talk to Harry on the phone and Harry relay messages. Mm. So Sylvester Stallone just called me and told me, "Don't worry, Expendables 2 will be rated R."
Good news, everyone.
Yeah.
But when it's like the Woody Harrelson one is the high water mark for AMA fails, right?
Yes. Yes.
I will be here for 15 minutes.
When ask me
from
anything
3 p.m.
really means ask me the questions I want to answer. My PR person wants me to answer.
Right.
And you know, for Obama, it's can be all vetted by PR people, and writers.
It's got to be like Veep, right? There's a whole team of experts standing around him.
There should
with
be
the computer.
A Veep episode where Selena, Vice President Selena, Selena Myers tries to do a Reddit AMA and then does not get enough questions, and maybe one of her subordinates has to ask a fake question, create a Reddit account, and gets caught. I'm giving you ideas, Veep.
More scripts.
What is this Veep? What are we talking about?
You don't watch Veep?
Veep is an HBO show. It's Julie Louis-Dreyfus. Oh. It's Elaine. She plays the Vice President of the United States.
Who is the most
ineffectual job in America, basically. But it's scary how realistic the show makes politics seem. And it's hilarious. It's a spin-off, kind of a spin-off of the British show.
Thick of It.
The Thick of It.
Huh. Maybe I'll watch it.
It's about powerful people really have no power.
I'm glad that the president didn't spend 6 hours answering AMA questions. That would make me think he's probably not using his time very wisely.
Yeah, I wanted to see like his photo should have been like five phones and like you know people handing him documents and like the whatchamacallit, the situation room wall behind him and like
you can't show people the big board
and basketballs and all sorts of stuff and just signing and
I think I kind of like that pensive photo.
Yeah,
they need to just widen way out on it so it's just him in the corner with the computer
with
a
big small computer.
Empty room.
Okay. Why wasn't he in the Oval? Like, do you think he doesn't like work in the Oval Office?
No, he's traveling. He's on the campaign trail.
Oh, he's on the campaign. Okay. That makes sense.
This is all part of the campaign.
Hey, you have 20 minutes. Do an AMA. Boom. Exactly. Most popular AMA ever.
He looks like he just woke up from a nap. It's time for the AMA.
I don't think presidents
can
nap.
That is.
I don't think that's something you can do.
I
want
to see Romney doing AMA.
Do you know that he has a bedroom in the front of Air Force One in the nose?
In the nose?
Yeah, that's where his bedroom.
That sounds like a really bad place for a bedroom.
If the Air Force One, all the communication equipment. If Air Force One crashes, it doesn't matter where the survivable zones are.
It's not about crashing. The nose is where you put the communications equipment, though.
It's 747. It's two layers. It's two floors.
So you're talking about this?
I'm not talking about the cockpit. I'm talking about underneath the cockpit.
His bed is just in the cockpit?
Yeah, he just goes up there. Hey, Bill, how's it going? We're about 35,000 feet.
The bedroom is six hours out. In
the nose.
Someone confirm this.
It's what I've always been told.
I do not believe it.
I'm immediately backpedaling.
I do not believe it.
Air Force One
is the president's airplane.
I know that, but it's a...
also a fine Harrison Ford movie. Wolfgang Petersen, I believe.
That movie isn't bad.
It's not bad. You're correct. Sorry. Well, Air Force One is...
never mind. I thought I knew more about Air Force One, but I was going to say some things.
It's a 747.
Get off my plane.
Yeah.
Did you see the video?
I'm the president of the United States. Clap, 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 clap. Cheers. He's alive.
Did you see the video of that guy who took the first class flight on the Emirates Airline 787 and took a shower at 40,000 feet? If you buy a first class ticket and have a private cabin with a little lid that goes over it.
In the Dreamliner?
No, Air Force A380. Airbus A380.
Oh, not 787.
Did I say 787?
Yeah.
I meant the A380. Sorry. Okay. It's another double-decker. So he got on he videoed his whole first class experience.
I would do that.
Yeah, of course.
I would totally do that.
You're not allowed to use electronics in the air.
He didn't give. When you fly first class on Emirates, you don't give a fuck. You can do whatever you want.
Fair enough.
You can take a shower on the airplane. So he went up, and there's like a whole little bathroom that's like wide and long.
So there's this water reservoir being heated just for shower. Because you know when you go in an airplane bathroom, the water is a stingy. They give you no water in that sink.
Yeah, you press the button, drip. 2 seconds.
You're like, I got to wash my hands. Oh, it's so gross. Nothing.
Yeah.
And yet, enough for a shower.
So,
do you think his water gets passed down, chilled, and then put into the regular bathrooms?
No.
Gray water goes into a special tank. So
it's a lot of gray water.
So it didn't look like a real high flow shower for what it's worth. He had video of him inside the shower. It was on Laughing Squid or Cocky or something yesterday.
Is there a time limit for the shower?
Yeah. So that's the thing is when you're in the shower and the water's running, there's a little countdown and it's like you are 100%. You are 75%.
Wow, shower gauge.
You are 50%.
Water gauge.
And then when you got to the red, you had to stop. So soap, get your soap done or not.
I don't think people really understand how much water they use when they shower. It is a lot of fucking water.
Well, I think all showers have a gauge of some sort.
I want gauges everywhere for water because the amount of water that goes through houses and stuff, it's a lot.
I had a water leak last month. I opened the water bill and I was like, what?
Oh, jeez.
What?
How much is your water bill?
$450.
Oh, my God. It's more than my water bill and six people live in my house.
Yeah. Well, so there was a leak. They came and fixed it. But mistakes were made. But, you know, they took the money. They took it off. They didn't charge me for the sewer part of the water leak because the water didn't go into the sewer.
How do they differentiate?
What do you mean? Well, they don't measure sewer outflow. They just assume it's a certain percentage of the water you use.
Oh, a certain percentage.
Yeah. So, but they looked at what my normal bill was. And we're like, no, you're cool. Here you go. Here's $100 back.
Nice of them.
That was nice, I thought. Yeah. But you should watch that video. It's pretty cool. I didn't think it was like right to put on Tested. It seemed weird to put on Tested. Also, the guy is super, super lame.
Is he douchey? What is he?
He's pretty douchey, yeah. I mean, he's the kind of dude that would take a first-class flight and then
– How much did that flight cost?
It was from Hong Kong to – no, it was from – I want to say it was from Thailand to Hong Kong. It was like a three-hour flight.
If you're going
to
do that, you got to plan the flight so it's making the most out of your ability to shower. So you don't shower out of – you know,
yeah, it was
if you are a morning shower person, you want to take a flight where you shower – you're maybe like
a red eye,
you wake up and you take a shower and then get off the plane. That's great because the first thing I want to do when I get off the plane is take a shower.
Yeah, hose off.
I feel gross on the plane.
I think I'd still feel gross taking a airplane shower.
So
the towels, I mean.
This was a flight that was short enough that the flight attendant was obviously annoyed that he was taking a shower on the plane because I'm sure it's a lot of work for the flight attendants too.
Oh, yeah. Is there cleanup?
I'm sure somebody has to go in and squeegee it off. Yeah.
Mm.
If you're paying that much money for an airplane ticket, you don't squeegee it yourself. Mm. But like the one of the flight attendants
was
tucked
glass,
him in.
Glass doors or?
He had the camera out and was holding it out at arm's length as he was showering, keeping it
out.
So
it's a curtain or a glass door?
Glass door on the shower. Wow. But the whole bathroom was like a closed – it was bigger than a cruise ship bathroom. If you've ever been on a cruise ship, it was bigger than that. It was bigger than a big cruise ship bathroom.
Okay.
Yeah, like in a fancy cabin. So, yeah, that was really weird. And he showed what the people in the back – he like walked through their cabins too just to show you what he was getting versus what the judges were getting.
I can't
what?
Sleep on cruise ships.
Really?
I
cannot sleep.
I sleep like a baby. The rocking
just puts me out.
I feel like I'm missing out on something. Something's happening. There's always something happening on
the
cruise ships.
What kind of cruise ships are you talking about? Are you talking about like a booze cruise or like an old person cruise? Because they're two distinctly different categories.
There's always something happening on a cruise.
Or you mean like
I have cruising
anxiety. What's that anxiety called where you feel like you're always missing out on something?
Yeah.
Norm always has that.
You have to go.
I mean, on an airplane, I can sleep like a baby because I'm not missing out on anything. There's nothing going on in the airplane.
Somebody's watching John Carter of Mars. You could be watching John Carter.
But on the cruise ship, it's like, oh, it's activity going on. What's happening in the ballroom right now? What's the buffets going on?
It's the food. I always gain 10 pounds in these things.
Gina and I went on an old person cruise once for her job, and it was like 500 people on this ship, and it was a kind of big ship. But it was a lot of like there would you would frequently go someplace, and there would be like somebody that was wheeled there in a wheelchair, and they'd say, oh, that's Mr. Johnson. He just lives on the ship now. And it was like retirees who had a shitload of money and were, instead of living in a retirement home someplace, basically just brought somebody on the cruise ship with them and they'd go around the world.
Huh.
Different port every day.
So Air Force One has the bedroom potentially is in the nose.
Did you confirm this?
I'm asking someone out there. We don't know where the bedroom is and what the amenities are like on Air Force One. We know there's a boardroom.
I think I probably learned this from reading Tom Clancy novels when I was in high school. So, you know, I may be completely wrong. I'm opening up. Oh, man, there's too much stuff in there. Okay, well, we'll find out next week and revisit the
Air Force
One.
Is there two Air Force Ones?
Yes.
One's fake?
No. They cycle so that if one has maintenance problems, whatever, I think there might even be three.
But they both don't fly at the same time?
Air Force One is just the code name for whichever plane has the president on it.
But I heard that they fly identical. I don't know where I heard this. It could be a dream. But there's some like the two planes fly and they're identical. So you don't know which one's the president's on.
I don't know if that's true
or not. Attack?
That doesn't seem true.
Remember, like Dark Knight Rises, one has the nuke, one doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And you need
fake convoy.
I think that they just defend the airspace around Air Force One pretty aggressively. I don't know for sure. Seems like they use security through obscurity for Air Force One a lot, except for the fact that it has the giant Air Force One painted on the side, United States of America.
A lot of people in Air Force One at all times. A lot of the press corps.
Yeah.
Photographers.
A bunch of Air Force dudes.
Yeah.
And ladies. People. It's full of people, man. Just like anything else, man. Air Force One. It's people all the way in there. Kepler. Do you guys know about Kepler?
Mm-hmm. Telescope.
Johannes Kepler was a astronomer, astrologist, physicist back in the days when those things were all kind of the same. And he described the motion of the planets, you know, that they basically were orbiting each other and came up with some formulas and stuff like that. There's a telescope named after him, and its purpose is to find extrasolar planets, so planets outside of our solar system. Until like the mid-90s, we didn't think there were any, or we hadn't been able to detect them. But I was reading about it today because they discovered a planet in some place we've never seen planets before. In a circumbinary planetary system.
What does that mean?
It means...
Sounds something like ritualistic. And
so it means that there's a two...
And barbaric. Well, why would you impose that on the stars?
Perverse, Norm. Two suns.
But there are so many.
In a solar system. So instead of having one sun like we have, there'd be a second sun. And they'd probably be orbiting each other, kind of. So like they... Typically in binary solar systems, either... when there's two stars, either one of the suns is really, really, really huge compared to the other one, so it kind of the second one orbits it, kind of, with a little bit of wobble, or they're close to the same size and they orbit a central point in space. So they orbit nothing, basically.
That's the best.
Space in the middle.
And they found evidence of that.
Well, no. So then they found, we found a single planet orbiting a binary solar system before. So that means one planet. Then usually they're really large gas giants kind of far away from the sun, incapable of supporting the kind of life that we understand that exists here on Earth. So the goal of Kepler is to find extrasolar planets that are Earth from a half a size of Earth to two Earth sizes, I think.
But it's so much easier to find planets that are
huge.
Massive.
Yeah.
Because they distort the light coming from the stars they orbit.
Well, there's a bunch of different ways to find them.
Yes.
But yeah, they want to find them that are in the range, a distance from the sun that would be habitable, because water would be melted, liquid form. So between 32 degrees Fahrenheit and 212 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 and 100 Celsius. They found a system now that has two planets orbiting a binary solar system. So it shows a circumbinary planetary system. What that means is that basically those kinds of planets can form – those kinds of solar systems can form accretion disks, which allow planets as we understand them to grow in a normal way, and the potential for Earth-like planets to be around those types of solar systems as well as those types of star systems as well is out there, which we didn't really know before.
Basically, they want to find Tatooine.
Tatooine is what they discovered, except for it's probably a gas giant. We don't know for sure. Maybe one is a gas giant, one's a giant ball of ice.
I want to find a sand giant.
I wish we had a sand giant. The way this thing works is really interesting. I'm writing it up. I was midway through writing it up when we started doing the podcast, so I'll probably post that tomorrow. But it's not a typical telescope. It looks like a normal telescope. The satellite, you know, like a reflector with the light comes in one side, it reflects off a mirror in the back that's curved and focuses on a point in the center. That part's normal, but the thing that's weird is it just aims at one spot in space. And it's relatively wide field, and it's looking at the same 100,000 or so stars over the entire life of this particular satellite's existence, and it's looking for tiny differences in brightness that will indicate planets going across between that sun and us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Because the way they typically done this was using gravitational lensing or something like that to kind of see wobble or weird gravitational anomalies. And this is a whole new thing that I didn't really pay attention to.
So they're just waiting for one little pixel to blacken out and then come back.
It's not even blacken out. It's just get slightly dimmer. So the pixels, the sensors there's a massive array of sensors inside the telescope, and each of the sensors is relatively dense. It's like 2,200. I'm not going to even say because I'll fuck it up. But they're pretty high resolution sensors, and they're tuned in a specific way to kind of let the stars bloom so that they get more information for each star. Hmm. And it's in an orbit that's behind the Earth, so it's not orbiting Earth. It's orbiting the Sun, kind of behind us, further back in our orbit. And it just stays in the same place, aimed at the same thing all the time, or it stays in the same orientation, aimed at the same place all the time. It's really neat.
How's Curiosity doing?
It's driving. They're going toward the Bradbury Heights.
Bradbury.
They named something after Bradbury?
They named something after Ray Bradbury.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bradbury Heights. Good, fine place to live.
Yeah.
Good place to raise your family.
Exactly.
Schools are okay. Martians.
Windows Phone 8 announcement. Well, rumored announcement. It's going to be released theoretically on October 29th, 3 days after Windows 8. Why don't they call that Windows Computer 8 or Windows Tablet 8 if they're going to keep calling Windows Phone 8 Windows Phone 8? People can't see shrugs on an audio podcast, Chan. The device that they showed off, Samsung showed off today, is the Samsung ATIV Ativ S.
It's Vito backwards.
Is that it? Is that why they called it that? It's a terrible name.
I don't know why.
Yeah, there's a bunch of specs and stuff. It's all – I mean, we'll see what happens when the phones come out. More on that as it's not a rumor anymore. But yeah.
It's shaping up to be an exciting fall.
But it's by modern Android standards. We all know that this doesn't really matter when you're comparing across OSs. It's a dual-core phone. The phone Samsung announced is dual-core, super HD AMOLED screen, you know, a pretty standard hardware for mid-last year
Android
life cycle. We
are definitely reaching a critical mass or an inflection point for where phone technology matters, the hardware matters. Like,
you think it does?
You think
it doesn't?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that we've been there for a little while.
No, I think we can use at 1 gig of RAM and at, you know, whatever, a gigahertz processor, 1.5 gigahertz processor, we're fine.
It's amazing.
It's all bad battery life.
It took 20 years to reach that point with PCs, and now we're
3 years
into smartphones. So, yeah.
well, 5 years into smartphones, but
really 3 years. Or, I mean,
2007.
3G was the real. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Bill Nye, the science guy, says that denying evolution is bad for America. I posted a video about this on Friday. It was very controversial, and there was a. I just wanted to say I was really proud of everybody because I thought it was up for a highly charged political topic. People handled themselves very
Bill
responsibly
Nye united
in the
everyone.
Comments. No, no, Bill Nye didn't unite everyone. That is definitely not true.
He just encouraged some good dialogue, some good discussion.
People on – I looked at the comments for this video on other sites, and I was really proud of our community. So whether you agree or disagree with Bill Nye, I personally think that he is right, that denying science is a bad idea for youth in America. But yeah, I think it was – you guys were very good. I'm proud of you. So yeah. Nerdy Derby, unless anybody has anything to add.
I think I heard this interview, or there was an interview on, I guess it was both on Fresh Air and on...
Say it right.
Fresh Air.
Thank you.
And on Talk of the Nation last week with a cognitive scientist who wrote a book about the brain and the just like consciousness and stuff. And always the questions, interviews with those guys always boil down to, you know, are you like Descartes or are you, do you believe, you know, are you an atheist and
free will or determinism?
What are your thoughts on creationism and stuff like that? And this guy made a really good point. I forget his name. It's that the point of science is just, you should not dismiss anything. And there's no such thing as scientific fact. There's only the current best scientific theory. Everything is theory until it is disproven. And there is the best theory with lots of evidence supporting it, but it does not mean that later on that can be refuted. And scientists should always strive to be open-minded and explore options. I mean, what's this guy? Francis Crick, the DNA guy?
Yeah.
As biologists speculated on the idea that maybe, you know, human life was seeded by asteroids, could possibly, and entertained that idea and investigated it and was laughed, you know, almost out of his business.
Well, there's a long history of scientists whose ideas were unpopular, went against the common wisdom for the time, that were run out of town on rails. I mean, Galileo, and if starting with Galileo. I mean, it's that's not an uncommon
ban from a city.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was going to be excommunicated by the church and all sorts of bad things. I don't remember, was that for saying that the sun was the center of the solar system and not the earth was the center of the universe? I can't remember.
Everything orbited around the earth.
Yeah,
I believe that's right, but I could be wrong.
I think my science history is. I didn't think we were going to talk about this, but So the thing I've always said is that science isn't something you should believe in. Science isn't something that requires faith. All science is saying, hey, it's a systematic way to look at evidence and use that evidence to explain natural phenomena, right? It's really straightforward. At this point in time, the best explanation we have for the way things became is that at the beginning of the universe, some stuff exploded. Things came out of nothing. Other dimensions maybe were involved. We don't know what happened before Planck time, and it's unlikely that we will give if our understanding of things as they are now doesn't change.
You want to live forever?
No. No, I really don't.
I do.
You're about to hit a real
There's also an interesting discussion on the radio about living forever and what the expected lifespan of our generation.
What is the expected lifespan?
And when I say our generation, I mean people right now under 30.
I have two more days of that.
Yeah.
What about people slightly over 30?
Well,
I'm halfway done, aren't I?
And
it's all downhill.
A lot of research indicates that if the trend of growing lifespans continues, we will be. Average lifespan will reach 100 soon.
Soylent Green is people then.
Just in advances in nutrition and
heart
cybernetics
care.
And
yeah. Cybernetics.
Yeah, exactly.
Old Robo Joey.
But it doesn't matter. There's the matter of, you know, how long do people actually want to live and whether there is mental capacity to live that long.
Well, You know, it's interesting you say the mental capacity thing. There was a study last week that basically they've figured out the brain plaque problem. What's causing the brain plaque?
What is brain plaque?
It has to do with the cerebral. What's the system that controls the cerebrospinal fluid and all that? It's basically, you know, your brain
the
is
cerebellum,
the cerebral highway.
No, I'm gonna. That's the name of the podcast.
Medulla oblongata.
Yeah, basically, there's a blood-brain barrier, right? So there's no blood in your brain. Yes. The blood flows through into a system, and that system transfers nutrients and stuff like that to the neurons. And part of that system's job is to clean the outside of neurons, for lack of a better term. One of the things that they found in elderly people with dementia and Alzheimer's and that type of degenerative brain disease is that they typically have a plaque buildup on the outside of axons
Sounds
of neurons.
Really gross.
Super gross. So you have to brush your brain, kids.
Fluoride.
Yeah, the precious bodily fluids. But what happens is, as you grow older, they've discovered what they think is probably the mechanism that causes the plaque cleaning to slow down and fail, which is posed as the cause of one of the potential causative agents of a lot of degenerative brain diseases.
So fix that mechanism.
So
live forever as a brain.
I mean,
Futurama becomes a reality.
You just got to get in the plaque cleaning jar. The problem with a lot of this stuff is we're talking about incredibly complex systems, biological systems, and it's stuff that we don't really understand fully at all. So you should always hesitate to believe when people say, oh yeah, there's one causative agent, one easy solution.
You don't want to freeze yourself?
For something like that. No, I mean, whatever. Did you read Transmetropolitan Man? I don't want to freeze myself. That is a terrible idea. No. You're going to come out of the freezer completely unable to cope with society.
Oh, I want to experience that.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
No. Do you think those people had fun?
You only freeze yourself when you're dead anyway. So I'd rather – the choice is death.
Okay, fair enough.
Or death and then coming back.
Death or to, other.
Or bewildered, you know, life.
I want to be Stallone in Demolition Man. I want to come out and see seashells and oh my God.
See
– oh, let's make a pact. No matter – we only have to be defrozen at the same time.
Thaw me out in 2011.
Within 2 years of each other.
No, same day. Everybody gets thawed at the same day.
I want like a 2 month. Like I want one person to be like, dude, come check this out.
Maybe it's that every 100 years, one person gets unfrozen and has to make the decision whether everybody else gets unfrozen. That's the pact.
No.
This is a movie.
No.
Yeah, so you get first dibs, Chan.
What?
So you 3100, get
2100.
You get to scope out and find out if it's worth waking us up.
So you had to wait 5 years and find –
you don't have to wait 5 years.
You can only go forward in time.
Yeah.
You can only go forward 100 years in time and you got to – well, there need to be rules.
You're out for 3 months.
3 months.
At the end of 3 months.
Gauge the quality of – so if natural expected lifetime – so if you're dead, let's say – To play it safe, you want to freeze yourself about 20 years before, let's say 10 years.
10 years
before,
is a long time.
10 years before your natural lifespan ends.
So what is it, like 60, 70?
No.
Norm's thinking 80. This is 90. Yeah.
85.
Okay.
You want to give yourself a good 10 years of fun.
You want to freeze before senescence, but after you've done everything you want to do.
Sure. So let's say you have an extra 20 years of active life in whatever perfect future that you end up staying unfrozen in. So if you have that 20 years and you have to spend 3 months investigating and you're in a cycle, you're only going to get, 20, 60, 180 centuries of possibility.
But by three people, divided by three.
No, that's times three. That's already three.
But you've got to figure that at some point there's going to be medical advances that expand that range beyond whatever.
I guess that's
– are you an optimist, Norm?
180 centuries is good enough.
See, what you're thinking –
1,800
when
years.
What you're thinking is when you were thinking about the transmetropolitan scenario where you come out of the freezer completely unable to deal with the depravity of modern civilization is that you'll be the one that can buck that trend. You can handle it.
Of course. Of course.
That's not true.
Of course. I guess relearning the language might be difficult.
It's all going to be just battered up English by that point. Hold on, babblefish. Boom, right in the ear. So, yeah.
How do we get on?
What job would you want in the future? Let's just say 150 years in the future. If you woke up, if you had to go under cryosleep now and woke up 150 years...
It's got to be something.
And
like
there was civilization.
Physical.
There's civilization. what would your ideal job be? Museum curator?
Well, see, maybe something really that's deal with my this. Time, right?
Playwright?
But you couldn't do anything creative, or not creative, but in
you
in
could
terms
be a teacher.
Like you couldn't be a teacher or editorial
teach history.
People. Like you're too
columnist?
Far disconnected.
Columnist?
But who would be your audience? Like
the dudes
freezers.
Who are fascinated with
you being
the, no,
of
fascinated
your...
with a history. Like the guy who's like think 150 years. If
so, a columnist covering your own time.
No,
almost like a historian.
Yeah, historian. Yeah.
Here's what you do.
You get to rewrite.
Or as you'd call it, Wednesday. Like last Wednesday. This is what happened.
You
Obama did our Emma.
Obama. You look at all the art that's been lost and then just recreate it as best you can.
No, but you have to have skill for that. It's not how that works.
I bet you could probably jam. I mean,
you'd interpret
a Campbell's soup can.
You would be a fact checker for movies, for their movies.
Oh, like the science expert?
Yeah, like that t-shirt is really wrong.
Yeah.
That band?
Nobody.
It was called the National, not the Republic.
Nobody would be wearing a Linkin Park t-shirt in 1980.
Yeah, come on, guys.
Get it right.
You could be that. You just go to movies all day.
Gag me with a spoon.
Go to historical movies all day. Watch documentaries all day.
Oh, that'd be horrible.
Be Ken Burns, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. See, yeah.
Or expert witness. 21st century expert witness.
Sure.
What if the Idiocracy scenario plays out and you wake up and you're the smartest man alive?
You don't want to be the smartest man alive.
No.
Responsibilities.
I'm worried that everyone would be giant.
You think they'd all be like 7 feet
they'd
tall and you'd be a dwarf?
Like Prometheus, just a bunch of tall guys and me.
I bet they could probably
pig me Joey.
Bald pygmy Joey. Nerdy Derby. You heard about this, Norm, I know. But the Nerdy Derby is a no real rules version of the Pinewood Derby.
Joey, were you a Boy Scout? Were you a Cub Scout?
I was a Cub Scout.
Did you do the Pinewood Derby?
No, I did not. We did like a smaller scale version where we made cars out of soapboxes.
But that's a bigger version.
Wait, what's a
Pinewood Derby is making the small block of pine wood, and then there's a track that slides down. You put, five cars on
it. Okay, so yeah, I totally did that.
Yeah.
You put weights on your soapboxes to make...
Well, there's a maximum weight limit.
There's a weight limit, yeah. And,
And you have to use all the materials that come in the box. You buy a kit with the wheels.
There's a lot of third-party materials on Amazon.
I remember getting graphite and some wheels.
Yeah, lubing up the wheels.
Yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm.
It's all about aerodynamics.
It's a Dremel. No, it's not, actually. It's all about mass and smoothness of your wheels.
Smoothness of wheels and where are the center of masses.
Well, rooting your car on as loud as you can.
That is a cool way to handle it.
Throwing some thumbtacks on the track at the last minute.
The other thing that it is all about is not using external power sources. Which is precisely the point of the Nerdy Derby. They're saying, hey, if it runs on a Pinewood Derby track, also there's a hill. So you go down a hill, and then you go up a little hill, and then you go down another hill. Hmm. But they're saying you can add external propulsion and do all sorts of crazy shit.
No rocket cars?
I don't know if they would allow rocket cars.
No rules.
They said within reasonable safety for the spectators. So I got to think rocket cars are probably off the table.
Mm-hmm. Firecracker.
We could build rocket cars, though. There's nothing stopping us from building rocket cars.
Yeah, there's nothing stopping us from building the Pinewood Derby track.
Yes, we could also build the Pinewood Derby track.
Designs are online.
Could you put a GoPro on it?
Why not? Oh, if it's rocket powered, the GoPro is not going to slow it down that much.
Cool.
I posted about the Pinewood Derby cars yesterday, and I got a lot of feedback from users. Some accusing me of needing a new way to meet 9-year-old boys, which was really creepy. and then others giving like the Pinewood Derby secrets.
You. Cubs, Wolverine, Weeblos, you Weeblos Scout.
Oh, stop this!
Pinewood Derby.
I wasn't a Cub Scout. I never did Pinewood Derby. The best tip,
Husky Engineer.
Stop this now. the two best pieces of advice I heard were to make the wheels as narrow as possible, thus making them faster, less surface areas, less friction.
Okay, because you really don't need turning.
You don't need any kind of friction on the wheels. You just need. Going downhill fast. Hmm. And the other piece of advice was to, instead of making it look like a normal car, like an F1 car with a pointy nose.
Yeah, a lot of people want to recreate the car.
Yeah, that's a bad idea because aerodynamics really doesn't matter that much. The better move is to carve a U out of the front of the car so that it rides as far down on the launch peg as possible. And then that extra 3 inches you get is going to give you an advantage going across the finish line.
Wait, a U?
So my hand is the front of the car. Remember, the starting peg is a peg that goes up and then drops down.
You're doing a prong.
So you make a prong, like a tuning fork.
That's manipulating the starting block. Mm-hmm.
But the starting block mechanism position makes all the difference in the world.
So your car has your front tires have to start
nothing
behind
to do with front. I think it's all about where the car rests naturally on the peg.
Wow, that is real shady.
No, that's
like looking at you, that's like one of those things you look at the track and one car is like already 5 inches in front of all the other cars because of where the peg is. If you get caught in the peg, that
but
you deserve it.
Yeah.
Now, is there any advantage to inside lane or outside lane?
I don't think that there's any drafting or anything like that in this. It's 3 lanes on the Nerdy Derby. I think we're going to go watch it. I want to see this in person.
Where is it at?
It's World Maker Faire in New York end of September.
September 29th.
Right. We're going to be there.
So we could film that.
We could cover the Nerdy Derby.
We could enter our own car.
We could enter our own car. We could have a Testicles car.
Okay.
We can set it on fire.
This is why I bought rockets yesterday also. So, I've been thinking about motor designs. If you have a design, if you want to see us build something
nothing
dumb.
Nothing I want to do more than beat children at racing.
This is for grown-ups. This isn't a child event.
It's for all ages.
I think what we should do is build the best design that the community puts together. This is my plan
for the
Nerdy Derby.
Why don't we build the best design we can think of?
I think that the community is smarter than us.
Don't be lazy. Build your own design.
Why don't you build your own design then, Chan? We can raise our designs.
Have them send it to the MakerBot and MakerBot build it for
it
us?
It doesn't work that way.
Why can't the MakerBot build a design?
Well, the MakerBot could print the body, but we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could definitely do that.
The MakerBot should make the car.
You're saying the Maker. I don't think we want to print wheels. I think printed wheels are going to be real slow.
No, just the body. And then put the axle and the wheels on.
Yes, we can do that.
Yes.
So somebody print a design. Design a body for us, or else I'm just going to make a big square. And we'll take it to the Nerdy Derby and race it, assuming we don't fuck something up and miss it or something. And then the last item is that the Apple Genius Guidebook leaked to Gizmodo this week, and it is fascinating reading. I encourage everyone to go look at that story because it goes into detail all the way down to the types of language that the Apple geniuses are allowed to use.
Did your phone crash?
No, it stopped responding, Norm. Hmm. Phones don't crash.
Oh, is this it?
Yeah, it's stuff like that. Okay. It also talked about how you identify customers. Like, you know how like you go up and you sign into the desk? Well, you may not, but you go in and sign into the desk.
Always walk into the Apple store looking like you know what you're doing.
So if I walk
no
in
uncertainty.
There, kind of,
then they're going to go, then they know, oh, light. Fish. Ooh, that guy wants to buy an accessory. He wants to buy a stand.
He wants an iTunes gift card.
The thing that I liked was the never apologize for the hardware. Always apologize for the way they're feeling. So if you didn't back up your computer and your hard drive crashed and you lost 10 years of family photos and the baby pictures and all that stuff and people are losing their shit.
It's not the computer's fault. It's your feelings' fault.
Right.
Why are you so
sad? I'm sorry you feel that way.
Why are you feeling so sad? It's not our computer's fault you're feeling so sad. It's your emotions. I'm sorry you're an emotional person.
I think you're missing the point.
I'm sorry you're so nostalgic.
That's not exactly the way they say it when you go to the store. I'm sorry you feel that way, Norman, but can we interest you in buying an external hard drive so this doesn't happen in the future?
So that's not an apology at all. That's the I'm sorry that I'm regretful that you are in a terrible situation.
That's I'm sorry I got
but
caught.
I am not.
Not
I
I'm sorry
not,
for doing
I
the thing
not
that I got caught for.
It's not I'm taking responsibility. Is I have regret that this situation is in existence right now.
You're correct. That is exactly the scenario. So, it's on Gizmodo. You should read it. It's really entertaining. I'm going to play some music unless we have any more news. Any more news?
I'm sure there's more news.
We got to stop at some point. I mean, we've talked about news for a really long time. And then we'll talk about what we've been testing because I think that's very interesting right now. Hey, Norman Chan.
Hey, Will Smith.
What have you been testing?
We did our quick look of the Microsoft Wedge Touch Mouse and Wedge Mobile Keyboard this week.
These are official Windows 8 peripherals, correct?
They are indeed official Windows 8 peripherals, charms and all.
What if you don't have Windows 8 yet and can you still use them?
Yeah, you can still use them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they any good?
I like the mouse.
Okay. Is the keyboard okay?
Keyboard is okay. I'm unsold on the Wedge design of the keyboard.
Did you like the Windows 8 buttons?
I don't have Windows 8 installed.
Is anything interesting on Daring Fireball right now?
No, not really.
I've been doing more MakerBot work. I printed one of those mixtapes. I printed a mixtape real early on because we bought a couple of those kits. We're going to do a quick look of that probably next week for the week after, or maybe even for next week. Let's get crazy. But I'm having some warping problems with it. Warping is where the plastic cools at an uneven rate. So if it cools too fast, then it curls back up off of the build platform, and then you get unlevel builds. So I rigged up a temporary way to block the air from interacting with the print as it's happening.
MakerBot looks real silly.
It's kind of hoopty.
It looks like the robot that Cartman is in South Park.
Yeah, it looks
awesome.
Awesome-o, yeah. It looks kind of
like this, man. I am a MakerBot.
I'll write MakerBot on the box.
My buddy.
I tape pieces of cardboard to the holes in the MakerBot, okay?
Have you seen my robot friend?
Such a good episode.
It does look like awesome. The spools in the back look like the hands.
Oh, my God. You're absolutely right. Well, I'm going to put a sign on the front that says MakerBot-O. So, yeah, we got that going on. Bags. I've been testing bags. I've come to a conclusion on the first three bags. I think I'm going to do them in sets of three because I think it's crazy to do bigger sets than that. I have a couple bags that I really like, one that I think is okay but not real good for normal human beings. And then we'll do some more later on.
And you have committed to tweeting your weight?
I'm going to turn the tweet your weight on the scales.
Are there two scales?
I can't remember if the Fitbit does the tweet your weight, but the Withings one definitely does that.
Okay, because if there are two, I will also commit to tweeting my weight.
Okay.
Let us do a weight tweet off.
I don't think that the Fitbit one is as accurate as the Withings one.
As a scale?
As a scale. Because the Fitbit one is frequently a pound or a pound and a half lighter than both the Wii Fit and the Withings scale. So either the Wii Fit and the Withings scale.
Are you releasing Krakens before and after?
I have not. No, when you have a decimal pound precision scale, there's a strong temptation to do before and after weighings.
I do that all the time.
Really?
That's why I want the idea of having a toilet that tells you how much liquid you are releasing.
Displacing?
Absolutely.
Oh, gross, dude.
And show me in a pint glass metaphor. Am I displacing one pint glass or two pint glasses worth of liquid?
What if the toilet measured the spectrographic content of your urine and looked at that?
I don't need the
to tell you whether it filled you with a cup of water that you needed to drink. If you your pee
should always
too
be
yellow.
Drinking water anyway.
It's a good policy.
I always keep my pee clear.
Really,
that's my policy. If my pee's yellow, I need to drink more water.
Okay, or beer.
Never.
Either one works.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, no, that's not right. Yeah, hey, did you see this spectroscope Kickstarter the other day?
Nope.
There is a guy who's making a spectroscopic spectrometer. Sorry. There's a guy who's making a spectrometer attachment for phones. He's making a cheap spectrometer and he's Kickstartering it. It starts at like $30 or $40 for an Android phone attachment, and you can go up to a tabletop thing for like $100. I ordered all of them because that is awesome. The spectrometer lets you analyze the molecular, the breakdown of elements inside a sample of whatever you want to spectroscope.
How big is the sample?
I don't have any idea. I watched the video. I was immediately sold.
Does it use lasers?
How
much is it?
$400 for all of them, or like $30, $40, $50 for the cheapos. I wanted to see the range because typically spectrometers are pretty expensive items. So I thought we could use it for coffee. So that's a thing that may or may not ever happen. That may be money that was flushed straight down the toilet. We will see. Kickstarter. I took home that Bodum cold brew press. It's a relatively new device from those guys. And it's designed to make cold brewed coffee rather than, normally you do a French press and you pour in the boiling hot water and you let it sit for 4 minutes and then you plunge it and pour the coffee out. This you do just like that Hario cold brew liter thing that we tested out last year. And I don't like it at all. I think it's really bad. I've gone out and looked for better instructions for using because I think I might be doing something wrong. Like the coffee that came out, it was so bad. I think I might have been doing something wrong.
What is it? What's it called?
So it's a French press.
But it uses cold water to brew instead of.
You put the coarse coffee in, coarse ground. You let it sit all stirred up with just a lid on in the fridge overnight or 24 hours or so. And then when you're ready to do the plunge, you take the sealed lid off and you put the plunger in, you plunge it, And then you have about a liter and 1.2 liters of cold brewed coffee.
So brews with a longer amount of time.
Duration. Okay. Yeah, so we've tested a bunch of stuff that we tested the Toddy, which does this. You can do it just with like a Chemex and a normal paper filter if you're a little patient. Yeah, there's no reason you can't honestly just do it with a mason jar and some coffee and then strain that through a cheesecloth or a normal paper coffee filter. But yeah, so this thing, the problem is unless you drink that whole 1.5 liters or dump it into another jar, then the sediment that's in the bottom of the press is going to make it's going to get gross because it's going to keep leaching out and make the coffee really bitter and acidic, which is what happened to me. So you end up having to – like the Hario thing has a filter that kind of drops into the top. And then when you're done brewing the coffee, you just lift the filter out, clean it out, and you leave the coffee in the glass carafe, which seems to work a lot better. Both of them are kind of a little ridiculous though. Although I do quite like the Hario cold brewer. So yeah, that's a thing that I'm testing. We'll do a quick look at that before too long. It's been a while since we've done any coffee stuff. We've also been testing, well, we tested some other stuff we'll talk about later, that, you know, fire and baseball bats and liquid nitrogen and stuff. You want to take some questions? Joey, anything you've been testing?
No, Left 4 Dead.
Okay.
Did you play the Minecraft Left 4 Dead?
I did play the Minecraft.
How was that?
Deathcraft. It was fun.
Yeah?
It's a little crazy with all the Minecraft assets.
Is it? It's Left 4 Dead, the game, with Minecraft assets.
Yes.
No, it's a custom-made campaign. It's a user campaign.
For Left 4 Dead, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
For Left 4 Dead 2, assets. Using Minecraft assets, characters are all Minecraft
weapons,
characters.
Enemies.
The weapons all look levels, like your melee weapons look like the
diamond
sword.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, nice.
And the gun's the same. The only thing that stands out as like not a Minecraft asset is fire. So like, you see real fire in a Minecraft world, but
sounds good.
It's a lot of fun.
Do you kill creepers?
Creepers are, I believe, spitters. So all the special infected are creatures from Minecraft.
What are the regular zombies?
Regular zombies are just the regular what's a creeper? Is that a zombie?
The normal zombie creeper. The green guys?
Yeah, the green guys are the zombies. The spiders are the spitters. They have like a tall, skinny guy as something. The witches are the witches are little girls, right?
Yep.
The witches.
Is this on the Xbox or on the? Oh no, this is Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I'm
confused.
No, we Left 4 Dead 2 on Steam.
Okay.
On like L4D2 maps, I think .com is where you get these custom campaigns. The witch is the chicken.
That seems about right.
You see a little chicken wandering around.
Don't touch the chicken.
Exactly. Chicken starts chasing
Does it
you.
Scream like still the witch.
Yeah, all the sound is the same.
That's terrifying.
Crazy chicken or duck, whatever it is.
Wow. You never want to touch the witch. Remember that? People get so pissed off about that.
Yeah.
Don't touch the witch.
Well, there's always the one person who touches it. It chases the same. I mean, we tactically do.
Yeah, use the shotgun.
I play with people that I play with all the time, so we kind of have our strategies down. So one person will get it riled up, run back, and we'll just shoot it.
Or you just walk up real close with the shotgun and boom, right in the face. It's
I
a
never
low
tried
percentage.
That. I'm afraid to get close to it.
It's
I always
a good policy.
That.
Yeah.
I decided that that's one of my favorite games.
It's really good. Yeah. I wish more people played it.
That's all I've been testing.
Okay. Let's take some questions and call it a show.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
Because we don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, send it to podcast@tested.com. Label it as This Is Only a Test question. Keep it audio questions only, please. Short, under 45 seconds. Make sure you don't sound like you're recording it from the back of a public bus. Here is the first question. It's about operating systems.
Hello, Tested Podcasters. This is DJ from Chattanooga, Tennessee, home of the fastest consumer broadband in the Western Hemisphere. I have a couple of upgrade questions regarding OS X and Windows 8. If I upgrade to Mountain Lion, will it affect my bootcamped Windows 7 installation? And if that's all good, can I upgrade the bootcamped Windows 7 to Windows 8 in October, or would I need to do a fresh install? I can't find any information on the internet about this, and the geniuses at the Apple Store were clueless. So thank you very much, and always be testing.
Both of those things should be fine.
I just did this.
Did you do the Windows 8 bootcamp?
No, sorry.
I did Mountain Lion
yes. update with Bootcamp.
And Bootcamp is
fine. Bootcamp's fine. My Windows 7 Bootcamp is fine.
Yeah. I generally recommend not doing the Bootcamp with a new version of Windows. I give it a week or two and make sure the drivers are fine.
I would do a clean install for the Bootcamp Windows.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
It's because when it updates and it refreshes the boot, I don't trust the
Not to fuck up the MBR. Yes, exactly. It should be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't. The first part is definitely okay. The Windows 8 upgrade, I would hang back on and let other people pave the way first. So yeah, that was easy. Chattanooga has really fast broadband, guys.
Not as fast as Kansas City.
I do not think that is correct. Kansas City has Google broadband, but I think Chattanooga is faster, and also it's rolled out. Man, when you type chat into Google, the first thing it suggests is roulette. That is not good.
Is that still something?
Chat roulette? Chattanooga is a funny word. It's spelled weird.
I want to gamble now.
Why do you want to gamble? Oh, because of roulette?
I just heard the word roulette.
Trigger words.
Roulette played a bit of a role in the book I'm reading right now. America's fastest broadband network, April 3rd, 1 gigabit per second fiber. That's pretty fast. I'm going to try to find the next question here. Here it is.
Hey guys, this is Mike, and I have a question about passwords. I read that article you guys were talking about that Matt Honan wrote regarding how he was hacked, and it made me finally decide to start using LastPass. I found it to be a very useful program, and I would recommend it to anyone who's considering it. My question, though, is about sites themselves and their password policies. As I was going through and updating my passwords to more secure versions, I came across sites that had odd restrictions, such as Netflix, which requires you to have a password between 4 and 10 characters, and I don't necessarily understand why. I was wondering if you have any insight as to why sites have restrictions in place that only allow for such short password lengths. Any insight you guys have would be helpful. Thanks, and always be testing.
The minimum is probably for security reasons. The maximum is probably for compatibility with input with devices.
Well, legacy devices a lot of times, or legacy clients.
Or it could be just BS arbitrary rule. I mean, it's definitely not a database thing on their side. Like,
well, it could. I mean, for Netflix, it could be, though, because they have the API. Like, their API is kind of old at this point, and it may be that they just fucked up when they started and haven't bothered to change it yet. So if they do change it, then it would make all of the old clients that haven't been updated in a while stop working, which would be bad for them.
16 character passwords, guys.
I think anything above 8 is probably
Joey, don't count out the number of words in your
You don't have enough fingers. Wait, 1, 2, 5, 4. Anyway, I think that's just bad work on most of their parts. I think
there was a website that I think Gary tweeted.
Don't put your passwords in random websites. It's a terrible
idea. No, you should not put your password in the random website, but you can test strings of characters and it will tell you how long it would typically take for a hacker.
How long was yours?
How long? 365 years to 85 years?
Mine was 96 million years. How long was yours?
I got to do this. What is it?
Okay, never mind. Don't put your password into sites.
Don't put your real password into sites, even if it's not a site where you have to press enter. Don't put your password into fields, basically, any field.
Do you ever do that, though? Like, you'll type in your password for the PC thinking your PC is locked or something before the screen comes up, and then you realize you just typed it into IM or something?
That's
real bad.
Like something you did. Well,
I've done that before. It's not smart.
Oh, I really meant this. I'm sorry. Hit my key.
Hey, I was talking to my mother about her maiden name.
Quick brown fox jumped over a lazy dog. What?
Yeah, that's my password. So I guess that'll do it for us this week. Also, we're taking questions for the Adam podcast. So if you have questions for Adam, send them to the podcast@tested.com email and indicate that they are for Still Untitled in the subject line, please, because that'll make it much easier for me and much more likely for me to actually read the email.
And yes, we acknowledge Neil Armstrong did pass over the weekend, but we talked all about that on Still Untitled.
Yes, that is true at length. So that'll do it for us this week. For Norman and Joey, thank you guys as always. I'm going to be at PAX this weekend. So if you're there and you see me, say hi. I'll be walking around. I might have some tested stickers if you promise not to stick them on things that aren't Ryan Davis. Anything to Jamie video going up today, later today. It's probably already up, actually, by the time you see this. We talked about welding. It's like a hot glue gun for metal. And we just launched a maker forum on the site, too. So if you want to talk about projects that you are building or make things you are making, that is a perfect place to do that.
Everything from paper mache to
cardboard. Whoa. Two types of paper. That's all that's in there.
Okay.
Music also. And food. Put food in there, too, if you want. That's cool, too. Anything that you make.
Or babies.
Yeah, no poop pictures. We don't want to see anything that, that goes into a toilet. So, yeah, that'll do it for us this week. Anything to plug, Norm, Joey? Joey, Norm? Norm, Joey? No? Yeah. We're good?
Let's plug the podcast.
Okay, we'll see you guys next Thursday, as always, with another episode of This Is Only Test. See you guys later. Bye.
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 Oh, wait, hold on. Outro. We got to play the outro. And then we, I guess we should do fake out. Well, we won't do fake out things this week. Today's outro is from Zeno.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested. I think you were making modem noises.
No, I think it was a baby related.
Really? Oh.
Squeamish.
That might be it. Okay. See you guys later. Bye.
Bye.